You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
We wish to acknowledge that we are on the territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nations land, which lands were previously occupied by the Seneca and Huron-Wendat First Nations. We call upon federal, provincial, and territorial governments to commit to eliminating the overrepresentation of Aboriginal people in custody over the next decade, and to issue detailed annual reports that monitor and evaluate progress in doing so.
Our service today picks up from the service that we had last week as we entered the seasonal program of Dream Away. And during that service, we toasted those whose dreams have brightened our lives, who have made the world a more beautiful place, and who continue to press themselves against systems of injustice and oppression. So we begin this morning with the wreckage of that service, and we lift from there into the rebearing of the dreams.
Since the beginning of time, we have wrestled with reality, struggling to bring dreams to birth, and finding over and over again that reality, with its terrible weight and oppressive truths, is often too great a match for many of the dreams to which we have aspired. Courage, the silent sibling of our most urgent visions, presses us toward a future in which we believe they might become real. It strengthens us, dulls our fear, and casts us into the ring, sending us flailing against what it is that would defeat us. We have done this since our hearts first beat hard against pain, against discord, against fear.
This is a symbolically powerful week. It began for us last Sunday as we celebrated the incredible dreams we have created, dreams of peace, gratitude, wisdom, and truth. We toasted those men and women who sought to bring dreams to life and who celebrated and encouraged one another as they did so. We felt their joy, their exuberance, and we too could feel the same, life urging us to make the best of it, pouring out our fingertips as we work to change the world and make it better. It was a feeling of exhilaration.
It didn't last. Often it doesn't. We recognized and named the many ways in which dreams are defeated, overcome by greed, oppression, ignorance, all things we ourselves are guilty of. We've left this space with our toasts mocked, our dreams discarded, the joy we had felt in them tossed aside. We felt despair and knew its strength. Surrounding any one of us, it can pull us down and deny the realization of our dream, of any dream.
Here are the hard realities of the dreams shared last week. Here is where we left the story. Dreamers and schemers have been plotting beauty, truth, goodness, all along the path of history, from the days of our very first thoughts. Well, maybe not the very first, perhaps the very first thoughts of love. The first human that gazed, smitten into the eyes of another, could only have thought of ways to protect that one he or she loved from the harsh realities of life. The inconsistencies of weather, the disasters of illness, and the lament of death.
But the world is harsh. It was obvious from the very start that dreams don't always come true. Tragedy strikes, burdens multiply, people die, and dreamers die too. Faced with the sorrows of life, we soon built a stairway to heaven, a dream that lives burdened with lament or hardship here, that could last forever in a realm devoted to the goodness, beauty, and truth that had eluded them on earth.
It was a decent dream. It was a good story, so good that we have kept telling it to ourselves generation after generation as a way to soothe ourselves when life's challenges overwhelm us, when the experience most common to all of us, loss, seems too dreadfully central in our one lonely life. When we cannot ease another's pain, when we cannot face a dark and dreamless future. We have clung to the dream, even as our world, for many, has turned to nightmare.
Even as we, who are born into the sunlight spaces of the dream, raise toasts in celebration of those who dream of a world filled with delight, truth, wisdom, and beauty, we recognize our interconnectedness and felt the cold that has long laid over the dreams of so many in our world. Even as justice, love, and peace adorned our dreams with hope, we recognize that for many, too many, in our world, such dreams are empty. Long ago, the light sputtered and died.
Those who rail against the systems that threaten the abundance of life on earth and who are denigrated, ridiculed, and sometimes even jailed for their efforts.
Those who press against the arrogance of power and do so without resources, without caution, without their own second thoughts, ever shutting down their optimism.
Those whose beauty has not measured up to the norms set by a dominant culture that, for whatever reason, forgot to notice the exquisite way that life, that light, plays off skin that is not white. Tones are layered and lifted in voices that are not honed in the West, bodies that do not squeeze themselves into fashionable shapes and sizes. Genders that fall along a continuum not sanctioned by white cisgendered males.
Harvey Milk, a man who fought tirelessly for gay rights and who died for the cause. those whose dreams we cannot guess, the great mammals that caress Earth's silent oceans in pursuit of plenty, salmon that slam against their own extinction, sealed in the concrete of hydroelectric dams, monarch butterflies shimmering their trailing glory on mountainsides, too cold to save them, Amur leopards and black rhinos, Oregon starfish and leatherback turtles, mountain gorillas and bluefin tuna, manatees and Arctic foxes, poison dart frogs and tree kangaroos, bees and Barbary carpet moths, beautiful petal tails and Burmese pythons, grizzly bears and giant pandas, great raft spiders and wild boars.
Those whose dream in the early days of our togetherness was of many people sharing a land full of wonders, large enough to sustain them both, but whose knowledge had seeded that dream with suspicion and distrust because of the manner in which these new to this land behaved and belittled them, killed and stole from them. The Coast and North Strait Salish, Tsianak and Haida, the Athapascan, the Anishinaabe, Blackfoot and Diné, Cree, Innu and Mi'kmaq, and the Haudenosaunee.
Those whose dreams have not yet been born, whose lives will unfold and merge with the future, whatever we leave it to be, who may be freed of the struggles we face, but whose own struggles may be of our making. Those whose dreams will be built upon the foundations we have laid down will burn with the truths we leave behind but refused to see.
Despair yawns like a great pit before us, threatening to swallow us whole, because we are sure there is not enough time, not enough energy, not enough resources, not enough strength. And we, bullied by our consciences, find it almost impossible to dream, and even now we dare to do so. We are drawn into a new dream. In it, hope rises like a luminous, delicate flower. It touches our hearts, and we feel them beat again with courage. It touches our minds, and we break the overwhelming into myriad moments, some of them infinitesimal, of yes, I can. Yes, I can. Yes, I can. It touches our world and we see all around us, not the unattainable, but fields of possibilities, and we feel in the same moment our hands overflowing with seeds. We are the change we want to see in the world, and we are ready.
Our readings today are from Rebecca Solnit's A Paradise Built in Hell, in which she argues the intense altruistic social ties that are created in times of disaster can prove that our better natures are ever available, but they are routinely stifled under pressures of artificial powers that are kept in place by fear. She reminds us that the dream is real. Most social change is chosen. But disaster doesn't sort us out by preferences. It drags us into emergencies that require we act and behave altruistically, bravely, and with initiative in order to survive and save the neighbors, no matter how we vote or what we do for a living. The positive emotions that arise in those uncompromising circumstances demonstrate that social ties and meaningful work are deeply desired, readily improvised, and intensely rewarding. In disasters, among the factors determining whether you will live or die are the health of your immediate community and the justness of your society. We need ties, but they, along with purposefulness, immediacy, and agency, also give us joy, the startling, sharp joy found in accounts of disaster survivors. These accounts demonstrate that the citizens any paradise would need, the people who are brave enough, resourceful enough, and generous enough, already exist. The possibility of paradise hovers on the cusp of coming into being, so much so that it takes powerful forces to keep such a paradise at bay. If paradise now arises in hell, it's because in the suspension of the usual order and the failure of most systems, we are free to live and act another way. Against a backdrop of despair, we dream again.
Truth. Though we ourselves wrapped our children in our own perspectives, taught them our truths, silenced their questions with whatever it was we believed we could bear, we want to listen now. We are drawn into a new dream. In it, truth glistens like a sword. Sheathed, it lies nestled in our hearts. A quiet voice pushing us forward, urging us to disclose it. Even in those places, it is not welcomed, wanted. Drawn, it slices and divides, but only ever on its way to wholeness, to greater understanding, indeed, to a new understanding of itself. Truth visits complexity and change upon our world and demands more of us than we ever expected we would give. But give it we will, for we must.
In some of the disasters of the 20th century, the loss of electrical power meant that the light pollution blotting out the night sky vanished. In these disaster-struck cities, people suddenly found themselves under the canopy of stars still visible in small and remote places. On the warm night of August 15, 2003, the Milky Way could be seen in New York City, a heavenly realm long lost to view until the blackout that hit the Northeast late that afternoon. You can think of the current social order as something akin to artificial light, another kind of power that fails in disaster. In its place appears a reversion to improvised, collaborative, cooperative, and local society. However beautiful the stars of a suddenly visible night sky, few nowadays could find their way by them. But the constellations of solidarity, altruism, and improvisation are within most of us and reappear at these times. People know what to do in a disaster. The loss of power, the disaster in the modern sense, is an affliction, but the reappearance of these old heavens is its opposite. Just as many machines reset themselves to their original settings after a power outage, so human beings reset themselves to something altruistic, communitarian, resourceful, and imaginative after a disaster, that we revert to something we already know how to do. The possibility of paradise is already within us as a default setting. Against the backdrop of deception, we dream again.
Though we have nurtured discontent, ever wanting more and falling victim to messages of what we deserve and what we need, we feel the invitation of a new dream. Gratitude rises like a banner waving in the wind. One direction, and its breeze caresses our face, fills our heart with joy, reminds us to open our eyes, bathe ourselves in the wonders surrounding us, pledge ourselves to their dignity. Another direction, and our hearts are filled again as we watch those around us shine under the same realization, strengthened by the goodness that seeps through the background of despair, encouraged by the simplicity of choosing to appreciate all that life is and offers. Gratitude's banner is held aloft by words that accept and acknowledge and embrace. They are our words, for it is only we who are able to express gratitude for one another's gifts.
Katrina tore apart many old ties and networks and begat new ones as well. These were no substitute for what was lost, but they matter all the same. When Katrina struck, people around the country immediately responded with an outpouring of grief, anxiousness to help, outrage at the government, and concrete support. Within the week, the Liberal Political Action Group, MoveOn.org, had set up a website, HurricaneHousing.org, on which nearly 200,000 people would volunteer housing, much of it in their own homes, to the displaced, even as the media were still describing New Orleans as monsters.
We live in the downtown area, so we are around anything you need. Schools, the zoo, job opportunities. Albuquerque is willing to do everything possible to help. There is a mom, dad, and a teenage daughter. We have two potbelly pigs and two cats. We are all new at this, but feel comfortable to call Collect. You are more than welcome to our home. We are horrified by the scenes on the TV. My mom and I rent out our rooms usually, but in this case it would be free. We are in New York State, which is a ways away, but we are willing to help any way we can. We live in a beautiful town with a great community, in a safe environment. We are not wealthy, but we will give all we can.
There was also a pagan bisexual couple in their 30s in San Francisco, and a young married couple in Bozeman, and tens of thousands of others in a nationwide surge of altruism. Against the backdrop of discontent, we dream again.
Though we acknowledge we followed the easy road of blame and justification that had been laid for us and have left little mark upon it, preferring instead to leave it unchanged for those who will come after, we feel the need to dream again. A warm and reassuring sky lifts itself clear of winter's Arctic night and unlocks the frozen portals beyond which our greatest possibilities lay dormant. Whose but our hands might, toward a broken story, be stretched, seeking to be forgiven and forgive, and through a simple gesture, offer peace. Whose but our voices might, toward a people we have denigrated, or a nation we have only seen as hostile, be softened. Peace, a spoken word of healing, offered forth. Whose but our hearts might, against a fractured, riven world, be broken open, and wrap with peace its crazed and hurting wounds.
William James argued following the 1906 earthquake and fire in San Francisco that permanent peacetime was only viable in a society devoted to something more than pleasure, that there must be causes, hardships, demands, common struggles. He had been born into pleasure and had to struggle for meaning himself. He proposed something akin to the Peace Corps, the War on Poverty, if, quote, there were, instead of military conscription, a conscription of the whole youthful population to form, for a certain number of years, a part of the army enlisted against nature, clearly an antiquated thought, close quote, then even privileged youths could understand, quote, man's relations to the globe he lives on and to the permanently sour and hard foundations of his higher life, to coal and iron mines, to freight trains, to fishing fleets in December, to dishwashing, clothes washing, and window washing, to road building and tunnel making, to foundries and stokeholes, and to the frames of skyscrapers would our gilded youths be drafted off, according to their choice, to get the childishness knocked out of them, and to come back into society with healthier sympathies and soberer ideas. Close quote. The essential argument that human beings are at their best when much is demanded of them doesn't depend on the particulars of his proposals. Quote, the martial type of character can be bred without war, James continued. The only thing needed henceforth is to inflame the civic temper as past history has inflamed the military temper. Against the backdrop of rancor, we dream again.
Justice. It seems oppression takes over the earth, and we, who could not hold the torch in every instance of abuse, every heart turned toward selfishness, every situation gone awry, must acknowledge our humanity and, in doing so, recognize that we have robbed others of theirs. Even so, we will not break and offer ourselves to a new dream. Justice comes to us in a drumbeat. Solid, insistent, urgent. It beats its way into our hearts, and our feet begin to tap with the rhythm. Soon we will dance. We dance for the children. We dance for the aged. We dance for those without food and those without dignity. We dance for those in prison. We dance for those who guard them. We dance for women, and we dance for men. We dance for the unborn. We dance for tomorrow. We dance for our murdered sisters. We dance for our angry brothers. We dance for the planet and the life that pulses upon it. We dance for justice because we are justice. The dance calls us out of our safe, secure little worlds, and the beat calls us to risk.
Lucha Libre means Mexico's theatrical version of wrestling. But the word lucha is less specific than the English word wrestling. It means struggle, and it's used in a political sense all the time. Lucha Libre, free struggle, the enormously popular Mexican sport, serves as entertainment with symbolic and political dimensions, a carnival of masculine power and imaginative adventure. Like most sports, Lucha Libre serves as a drama with an unknown outcome for the conflicts between the good guys who play by the rules and those who cheat and generally embody evil. The wrestlers are always masked, anonymous, with stage names that have no ordinary names behind them. Until 1987, many wrestlers' careers overflowed the ring into pop culture. But one wrestler came from far outside the ring to wrestle with injustice. Super Barrio emerged from the ruins of the 1985 earthquake, or rather from the lucha, the struggle that came out of the earthquake. When politicians cut ribbons or staged other public events they hoped would reflect well on them, Super Barrio would show up and pressure them to do better by the poor. He confronted landlords, showed up at evictions, meetings, and demonstrations, inspired the strugglers to feel more confident and powerful. He became famous as a sort of latter-day Robin Hood of the urban poor, and he lives on more than two decades after he first appeared. He is credited with stopping 10,000 evictions. And when he appeared on camera in a recent documentary, he spoke about his politics in such phrases as, "We have asserted that the city belongs to everyone, and the credit goes to the people. Super Barrio is all of us." Though the only one in costume, he placed everyone around him in a carnival mode and opened up the possibilities. Against the backdrop of oppression, we dream again.
How true it is that we have overlooked the gifts of those whose messages were testimonies to strength and beauty and love, preferring instead to numb our senses, boring ourselves into insignificance, the dreams of our childhood, when every joy was lived to its fullest, tucked away in the attics of our memories. But we are not inured to joy. It flames out, shimmering about us, glinting in the dark. Someone's laughter reaches us, a child's crayon family, excuse me, a child's crayon family held up by magnets draws our eye. A puppy loping through the park on two big paws sees a squirrel, wags its tail, and tumbles after an impossible friendship. The line in a stone, the whirl of a shell, the beat of a wing, the buzz of spring, the arc of a cloud, the lap of a wave, the blink of a star, the beginning of a friendship, the sharing of our hearts.
No one had a better time of the 1906 San Francisco earthquake and fire than the journalist who published a piece 11 days after the quake. Pauline Jacobson had lost everything in the earthquake, gone over to Oakland to buy, quote, a stock of face creams and soap and dresses, and then decided against the purchases. Had she bought the goods, she explained, she would have had to buy a trunk to put them in. To buy a trunk would entail hiring someone to carry it. And that meant, quote, a return to at least a partial degree of the old permanency, close quote. That permanency for her included class divides, becoming an employer, owning something while others owned nothing, quote, and I slipped my money back in my purse. All too soon would return the halo encircling exclusiveness. All too short would be this reign of inclusiveness. There was plenty of time for petty possessions, plenty of time for the supercilious snubbing of the man or woman not clad according to the canons of the fashionable dressmaker or tailor. In the meantime, how nice to feel that no one would take it sadly amiss were you to embrace the scavenger man in an excess of joy at seeing him among the living, or to walk the main street with the cook. Have you noticed with your merest acquaintance of 10 days back how you wring his hand when you encounter him these days, how you hang on to him like grim death as if he were some dearly beloved relative you are afraid the bowels of the earth will swallow up again? It is like a glad, gay, good holiday, all this reunioning. Against the backdrop of pain, we dream again.
Beauty. Oh, how we have failed beauty, fragmented it, and casting its greater portion away from us. How broken are our hearts for lack of what is so wide and deep and rich. With aching arms, we reach out toward this new dream in which beauty is remembered, its whole family brought together again, the marvel of it complete and whole. Felt and welcomed in our hearts, its weight stretching and changing us as we receive it. Joy spills over with its wonder. Each set of eyes, brilliant. Each skin-wrapped wonder, magnificent.
Aislinn Colgan, a young medic, reflected on her nearly 2 years on and off in New Orleans after Katrina. It is so rare that you get an opportunity to put into action what maybe you've sat around the coffee table and talked with someone about. When do you ever see that the powers that be are failing at their duty? And when do you ever get the chance to move beyond being angry about it and actually do something very concrete and tangible and immediate? The systems that you'd expect to be in place were just not, and we were able to fill that gap. I was really surprised by, and I don't know if the right word is empathy, but I was really surprised by just how far down you go with someone. I don't know how to describe it, but there's a depth to my understanding of pain and a depth to my understanding of joy. I was never a person who cried about happy things, but I find that I cry more often. I feel like I have a much stronger sense of the harshness of life and also the beauty. It's like they're one and the same. Against the backdrop of desecration, we dream again.
A mirror rises before us, and in it we see all we have ever been. Images sliding past behind our reflected shape, each a story told. In the depths of the reflection, we see connections we had not seen, costs we had not assessed, courage we had not tapped, love we had not realized. We are humbled by the witness of our past, humbled and made wise.
A small, dark man from Monterey, California, of unclear ethnicity and a very distinct Harley-Davidson motorcycle, told me that 10 months earlier, in August of 2006, he had taken a detour to New Orleans on his journey to watch the leaves change in Vermont. And I was going to stay for a month, but they asked me to stay. At first, I thought I just wanted to help because it was such a mess. In New Orleans East, this elderly couple had been in this house 35 or 40 years, very elderly. They couldn't get anybody to tear it down. They had no insurance. They had to get the lot leveled. So every day they would burn. They would tear off part of their house and burn it in the front yard. You see stuff like that and you just get angry. Like I said, at first, I thought I was doing it for an idealistic reason, but I get more out of it than I put into it, a lot more. I'm doing it for the people here, the people I'm working with, and the volunteers. That's where I get my love from. Against the backdrop of arrogance, we dream again.
Bleeding headlines and horrific violence try to convince us privileges have been revoked. Rights dissolved, voices silenced. Every time fear rules, we lose. Despite what seeks to freeze our hearts to immobility, resistance rises within us. A resistance born in the midst of weakness, a humility of loss. When there is nothing left to lose, we have nothing left to lose. Our dreams remain, and they are ours to lift up, to animate, to make real.
Fixing the wrongs is the work that everyday disaster requires of us. Recognizing the wealth of meaning and love such work provides is the reward everyday disaster invites us to claim. The existing system is built on fear of each other and scarcity, and has created more scarcity and more to be afraid of. It is mitigated every day by altruism, mutual aid, and solidarity, by the acts of individuals and organizations who are motivated by hope and by love rather than fear. They are akin to a shadow government, another system ready to do more where they voted into power. Disaster votes them in a sense, because in an emergency, these skills and ties work while fear and divisiveness do not. Disaster reveals what else the world could be like, reveals the strength of that hope, that generosity, and that solidarity. It reveals mutual aid as a default operating principle, and civil society as something waiting in the wings when it's absent from the stage. A world could be built on that basis, and to do so would redress the long divides that produce everyday pain, poverty, and loneliness, and in times of crisis, homicidal fear and opportunism. This is the only paradise that is possible, and it will never exist whole, stable, and complete. It is always coming into being in response to trouble and suffering. Making paradise is the work that we are meant to do. Against the backdrop of fear, we dream again.
The balance so far has been hope and dream in the context of all that needs to be done. And I would like you to picture that you are in a small town on the street, and all of a sudden in the distance you hear some music starting, and then you see a group of people who are walking together And they are heading towards any one of what we have just heard of, a need or a disaster or things that need to change. And they're walking there. And you're going to hear them get, you know, nearer and closer and feel what they're about, that they are simply not going to turn back. And then as the song fades out, I want you to picture them walking towards whatever need is calling them. And as you hear them walking, I want you to picture that it moved you on the side of that street to stand up and walk with them, never turning back.
I just want to talk to you a little bit about what the cost of rebearing dreams is. The cost of lifting up those things that we've watched fail and fall so many times in the past. There are people who have lived their entire lives pouring out against systems of oppression and systems of injustice, pouring their every moment into concluding that work. And they've died before it's been finished. Their dream ends up on the floor. And so we have the opportunity to pick those dreams up ourselves. Not just because somebody's died, but maybe somebody's too tired or somebody's off on another thing that they need to do and they don't have time to attend to it. Maybe we've just figured out that there's something in the world that needs truth telling. And we know something about it and we can tell that truth. Or we don't know anything about it, but we honor the person who is sharing that work with us, and so we stand in solidarity with them. Symbolically, each year we talk about those dreams that galvanize beauty and goodness and truth in this world, that bring us together around causes that elevate human dignity, that call us to see and look and share and understand individual people in ways that draws us toward them instead of ways that we have too often found easy enough to turn away. Spoken Reasons, spoken word poet, has a t-shirt on his website that I'm going to get, I'm sure. It says, "Comfort is one hell of a drug." And it's true. We don't want to change the ways we live. We don't want to have to put another hour into something else in our weeks. We don't want to have to take that, walk that extra mile or take that extra even step. But once we have committed to picking those dreams up, we are the bearers of those dreams. And we carry them forward. And we commit to making them so. You go out into a world that every day will grind a dream to dust. That every day will make sure that someone doesn't get what they want or what they need. That will make sure that you fail. But you go now with the dust of dreams. And with it, you can make something beautiful. With it, you can lift up a dream that someone has dropped, one of your own. And you can go out into that world and you can stand tall. Live that dream again. Know that this world is changed only through our hearts and our hands, our vision and our voice. So go and be brave. Go with courage, holding one another, watching one another away. Go in peace.
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.